Blog Talk Radio.
Gigi Kamala, putting it down.
all the way from South Africa. Man, oh, man, oh, man. And I, am I excited? I know I just got the phone with him, too, a couple seconds ago. I am just so excited to have this brother on. Man, and, you know, this is great. Indie Jazz Day on Soul Out Records Radio. This is Wardell Potts Jr., your host, and by GC Kamalo. Let's see. That's by GC Kamalo. Yes, I had to learn how to say this brother's name. And I'm praying and I'm hoping that I'm doing it some justice because this brother deserves it. Oh, my goodness gracious. It is time. I'm going to bring him in right now so we can get going with this interview by GC Kamalo.
Wardell, how are you, brother?
Oh, by GC Kamalo, I love you. I love your name has challenged me for the last
few years. Let me educate you. Bajiti means our people. That's my grandfather's name. It means our people. Kamalo means nation. So here we go.
Oh, wow.
Zulu Nation.
Beautiful. There you go, Zulu. Well, you know, when I was in South Africa and I had a car accident and I was going down, I forgot what the name of that street was, but it was one of the main streets going into town coming from Johannesburg, and I was going down and the hill was kind of steep, and I was going down the hill and it was like about 10 o'clock at night. I was on my way to the studio. And this guy came out in the street, and I hit him. He was drunk. And then I hit him, and I just sat there. I sat there. He went flying. I'm sorry to tell you the story. But what happened is that there was nobody out, and then all of a sudden, there was a ton of people out, a ton.
Yeah.
And they were all speaking in Zulu. And I used to play basketball right there in that area. And some guy came over and said, "What else?" And I was like, "Yes." I was just sitting there frozen, right? And he was like, "Well," I said, "Yeah." He said, "You okay?" I said, "Yeah, I'm okay." But the guy, I'm worried about him. But then he turned around and spoke in Zulu to all your brothers and sisters, or should I say all our brothers and sisters. And he said, "Yep. It's Wardell from America. He's okay. It's okay." And then they all turned away, but I was scared, dude. I was like, oh my goodness, I can't speak the language. I don't know what to say. I mean,
oh, you know, you're in trouble.
Yeah, but my Zulu brother who loves basketball was there. It's amazing because I played basketball right there, and he was right there.
Yeah, you know, funny thing, because we had the basketball court, but we didn't know what that was, and then the girls, they started to play and shooting some hoops. Nobody knew because we like soccer people. We like football, you know, soccer. But the basketball, it was like a new thing. But you know, for me, I started to love the basketball when I came to the States.
Ah, okay.
Lakers.
Well, you know what? It got those guys were getting good. It was good. I felt like Michael Jordan because I knew that they were more into soccer than they were into basketball, and I was taking advantage. I was like, "Yeah, watch! I was having a good time." Or you know, but you know, they started getting really good, and it got very competitive. And it was, you know, once you learn it, then it's on, right? It's just up to you. But listen, I have a suggestion. You may have already done this already, but your name is so beautiful. It means such a wonderful thing, but why don't you do a song by GC Kamalo, by GC Kamalo? You know, some kind of chant on the chorus, by GC Kamalo. You know, I think, however you say it, I just think it says something so special, and you're talking to your own people.
Yeah,
and,
you know,
and it's
here's
about
the thing also, too, about that name, Bagiti, it means, like, you know, when you guys say, "Oh, my God," you know, in South Africa, they use Bagiti a lot. "Oh, Bagiti," because, you know, it's our people. Instead of saying, "Oh, my God," they say, "Oh, Bagiti," because my whole name is Bagiti Emmanuel Nkosinathi Kamalo. God is with us. Emmanuel, you know, same thing, but Bagiti, that was my grandfather. You know, it was a struggle to keep it because, you know, with the system, as you know.
Right, right, yes.
But
who named you?
My grandfather.
Okay, okay.
Because I was so raised by my grandfather and my grandmother, you know, my mother was working in the city in Johannesburg, and but my grandmother, when I was born, they took me to my grandmother's house. That's when I grew up, and my grandfather gave me the name.
Okay. Wow, this is so cool, man. Listen, I'm telling you, you don't know, this is like full circle for me because I was there in 93, and sometimes I hear some of the songs, the chants, the way that you guys, the harmonies, the way they sing and stuff. And I was there. I was touring around for the Serafina movie.
I played on some tracks on them in the recording. Yeah.
And okay. And what's his name? Produced it. I'm trying to think of his name.
Bongeni.
Yeah. And so, as a matter of fact, when I had that accident, Bugini came there and saw me and started talking to me and asked me if I was okay. He was there. He pulled up in his white Mercedes. He's like, hey, Wardell,
okay? Yeah. Oh, that's him. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
But listen, I want the world to hear your story. I know so many people have already done this, but I want my listeners to hear your story. And kind of give us an idea of how you became who you are. Like, why? How did you pick the bass, or did the bass pick you? Like, what made you do what you did musically? How did you? And you can take your time because this is your time. This is your story. So just share.
Wonderful.
If you want to know how you got started. Go ahead, Mike.
Yeah. So first, I'm going to start by saying that I grew up in a musical family. My uncle played saxophone. And so as a kid, like, you know, 6, 7 years old now, when I started to pay attention on music, and my uncle used to practice weekends, and he brings his own band, you know, like his friends, they come home and hang out because he had a day job. So from Monday through Friday, he's working, but Saturday, you dress up and show me his Floorsham shoes. I didn't even know what he's talking about. And then he's playing some music, and he says he's playing the 12-bar blues. He was like a big Count Basie and Duke Ellington fan because he played saxophone. So he had a lot of people playing saxophone, like a big band, but in a South African style. So as I grew up hanging out with them weekend, and I just kind of loved what they were doing. And every weekend, it was just like a blast. And then, but not only that, the next thing was South Africa has got so many tribes, so many traditional people, and weekends everybody dress up because they know the cops, they're home, they're chilling, they're drinking, you know, so people can enjoy life and go each and every street and singing their traditional language and dress up with the clothes, you know. So for me, it was like really like what they were doing and the sounds that you hear on the weekend. And when it's Monday, the cops are working. You know, except Friday.
So
for me, that really got my attention. Like, look, music, you know, and we loaded with this traditional, I don't understand their language, but the music, it was amazing. Being a Zulu person, you know, I'm familiar with my Zulu tradition, or like Ladysmith Black Mambazo, like, you know, all the Zulu, like Mahotela Queens and Mahlathini, you know. But so as I grew up, then I got very interested with music. You know, of course, the system was brutal at that time, you know, because the school, there was no school. I've never been to school. I had to start to schooling myself. And I said, listen, you know, what I need to do with me is to stay glued to the music and then go to every part of the township that had music and just hang out with them. And then if the bass player is weak and I can do something, then I tell them, let me, I can play this song. And I got a lot of bass players losing work because of that. When I show up as a young kid and then I look awesome, people love me. Even when I play two bad notes, people, they don't care about that, but they just see this kid is coming. So, you know, and then in the township, you know, of course, you have to keep ducking the bad guys on the street because everybody was hungry. So if they see you with a plastic bag or a guitar or something, you know, you're going to lose it. And then, of course, if it's not the street people, then the cops. When they see you with the instrument, what are you doing with this? They take the instrument, put them in the ocean. because they didn't think music was business. You know, of course, he was a system that was controlling people to let people know what they're trying to do. It's not good. But they want people to be slavery. And, you know, each and every part of the township had fenced on. So it was a struggle even trying to learn music as a kid. But you know what? My thing was like, these people, they don't do nothing for me. And I need to think about myself because it's easy to be redirected. You know, you can be redirected and get lost and you'll never come back. But exactly. I stay focused, understanding about Hugh Masekela and Miriam. When they left the country, they went to fought for us to speak the language, to say, look, we've been treated unfairly. And they spoke for us. So, but my thing was like, find the ex and stay with it. And for me, you know, I just like to prepare myself. So as a kid, I always prepare myself. I did a lot of things. I did boxing at some point to protect myself from the street people. I can be able to punch a couple of people, which is I did eventually, you know. And then I played the soccer. I played the soccer because I knew as a boxer, you have to, your legs is most important, your legs and the chin. And then, you know, protect your beauty if you're handsome. So I had to get involved with a lot of things that was going on in the township just to, you know, stay ahead. But my thing was music. And I had to fight all the way to play music and without a bass. And there was a time where I didn't have the instrument. Like, you know, in South Africa, you join the band and they already have the bass. So you just show up and play. When you go home, you have more eggs. So my thing is to cut the piece of cardbox, like a bass, and then play the cardbox without strings and everything just to remember the fingering, use my memory and my muscle.
Wow.
You know, like, okay, when I get the real bass, how am I going to play Marvin Gaye song? Like, what's going on? And then, or like some traditional South African stuff. So, you know, I just really stay focused on the bass. And then the system was brutal too. You know, there was a lot of things. I lost my cousin in 1976 because of that. But for me, it was like, stay focused. And until you get an opportunity, that's when Paul Simon came in and saved me from that. But other than that, it was like learning, you know, fix your talent. And then when good things are happening, then you get hired. And then I was doing a lot of sessions, traditional sessions. And sometimes the American group, they come like, I think it was maybe in 1981, there was American three singers. They called themselves the Realistics. And they were looking for the bass who can play like Brothers Johnson, slapping, you know, and playing all the you know, the American stuff. And I knew it because I was glued to the radio. When it's American time, you know, South African radio station, sometimes they gave us something that, okay, this is what I'm going to listen to, not the Dutch music because I don't understand it. I don't even understand the groove, you know, where they are. But when they play Motown, I'm glued to the radio, more radio. But that gave me a lot of bass lines, James Jamison, and then started to pay attention on some American bass players like Stanley Clark, Marcus Miller, you know, just all the greatest bass players. And then I started to really learn. And when The Graceland by Paul Simon came, I was already seasoned now with my fretless. I was just flying all over the place because, hey, here's the freedom. I'm taking it. You know, I need it.
Yeah.
I earn it, you know.
Right. With that being said, this is the 35th anniversary, right, of that album.
Yes, it's 2 days of the 35th anniversary of Graceland. And being with Paul for a long time.
Man.
Yeah, being with Paul for a long time because I've been on tour with him until the final tour before the pandemic. So that's when he stopped.
Oh.
We played the Madison Square Garden and Queens. And then we got hit with the pandemic. But it's been 35 years 2 days ago. And for me, it's a celebration to say, look, I took the bass to another level where Hugh Masekela and Miriam didn't reach. But I reached that because it was my time after their struggle. And then I came in, I was the next. So I took this to another level. That I didn't come here as a politician or as a struggle bass player. I came here because I had the talent to come here. And I was prepared to come to America since I was 12 years old, because every time I hear this music and I said, man, can the plane just drop down and take me to America, because America is great. I don't know what they eat or do they sleep. What's going on with this city? Why did it play so good?
Let's just hear a little bit of what you did back here.
If you was my bodyguard, I can be your long lost pal. I can call you Betty, Betty, when you call me, you can call me out. A man walks down the street, he says, why am I short of attention? Got a short little span of attention, and all my nights are so long. Where's my wife and family? What if I die here? Who'll be my role model now that my role model is gone? He ducked back down the alley with some roly-poly little bat-faced girl. All along, along, there were incidents and accidents. There were hints and allegations. If you'd be my bodyguard, I can be your long-lost pal.
Oh, my God.
There's a crazy bass solo there.
Yes. And it's very famous for that bass solo as well.
Yeah.
You're very, but I mean the way you play bass. I'm gonna play the song for the audience again. But the way you play bass is just absolutely amazing. And me being a drummer, I understand what it takes to put your heart into something, and you put your heart into something that you, in the beginning, that you only had a chance to play it in school. Then you had to come home and kind of just fake it, that you, like, just for the fingering. But how, I mean, man, oh, man, for you to become who you are and what you went through to get to where you are is absolutely an amazing
story. Here's the thing. You know, when you've been given, you intend to relax a little bit, you know, because, you know, you don't have to work hard. But to get to the level, you have to work hard and then look back and say, yeah, this didn't come easy. You know, I earned this.
That's it. Exactly.
You know, because for me, it was like, get out of here. Oh, you're going to die. You're going to stay here. You're going to have nothing. So for me, it was like, play what's needed. Don't overdo it. You overdo it, you might lose the gig, or you do it well, then you stay on the gig. For me, and, you know, funny thing, when we were doing this record, there was, you know, the record companies in South Africa, they got involved because they wanted to bring their own musicians so that they can take from them, like they've done it in the years, in the past. So, but because Paul, of being such an amazing musician, he saw that. But Paul was looking for the sound, what's new? You know, not people slapping the bass, you know, like, and not play what's needed. They play what's been heard before. But Paul wanted something. He's in Africa. He wants the Africa. So that's when I said, okay, now I'm playing the bass. That's different. The fretless bass, it's different than the fretted. The fretless gives you a voice. You have to listen to it when you're playing. You don't play like you know it already, unless you do. But if it's the kind of instrument, it guides you to, okay, that's me. Okay, this is how I speak. You listen. You know, you don't. So for me, once I got that bass, and I was like, this is the African voice. So if I treat this, it's gonna, you know, show the world.
I did it. Well, because the fretless to me is, I'm a drummer, don't forget. I don't know anything about bass, but it's my favorite instrument. You know, drums and bass, they got that thing, right?
Yes, of course. So, it's a rhythm section. You know.
Right, yeah. So, for you to choose the fretless over the fret, it's more challenging. Why did you choose? What was it? I mean, I think you kind of said
it,
but
an answer for that. Now, like I said, I talk about the cardbox that when I go home, I practice the cardbox and then go back to the rehearsal, play their bass that's been given to me to play, at the, you know, because the owner of the band owns the instrument as well. So,
right.
So now I need to practice. I have a gig weekend, and then Monday, what am I doing? I don't have a bass, so I go to the music stores and then start sneaking in the music stores and then pick up the bass and play the bass. So I did that a couple of times until the store owner saw me, and then the store owner was like, hey, wait a minute. You always come here and play the bass and not buy anything and then walk out. You know, don't do that. You cannot come here, or else there's a bass sitting there. Nobody plays that bass. You can play that one, damage it, nobody cares. But you cannot play any other fretted bass. So he pointed the fretless, and then I went to play the fretless. And I said, okay, this one I can come every day and play, and nobody's going to say anything. But I don't understand this instrument. You know, there's no fret. So then I go to my mother, said, Mom, I need some money. I need to buy a bass so that I have a bass at home to practice. Then I bought the fretless. It was like $100. I bought the fretless.
Wow.
I take the fretless home, and I was trying to play the damn thing. Was out of tune, like crazy. I mean, like I was getting frustrated. Like, now I took my mother's money, and this thing is not working out. But, you know, I need it for the gig. So I get a gig to go and play, like, you know, African pop songs, you know. And then I play the fretless, everybody, the singer covers, the EA is like, something is wrong here. And then when they turn around, they look at me like, oh, maybe it's you, because the bass doesn't have the lines. And the sound was not the African sound, you know. And then I get kicked out. So once I get kicked out, a couple of groups, and then I said, you know what, the best thing, I have to go to the mountains to work with the traditional people, because there's no tunation, everybody's out of tune like crazy, but they're happy.
right.
So I go to Lesotho, and then I work with the Lesotho people. The guy's playing accordion, and you know, and there's everybody's dancing, and they're playing this the deer horn, you know, like, you know. And I said, man, this is perfect here. So then I listened to the accordion player, and then I started to hear the fretless. And fretless and the voices become a human voice. Now, I just practiced that, and I forgot about the Western music. I practiced just like to sing with the local people. That's what got me this far, because once I listened to the fretless, then I had to find my voice from the fretless, and that sent me to Graceland.
Wow, that is amazing.
Yeah.
So how did that even come about? How did you make that audition? How did you hear about the audition with Paul Simon? Where did that come from?
Now, here's the thing. So because I've been playing on a lot of traditional recordings in South Africa with different tribes, you know, I come in and just drop a couple of notes and then go back to the struggle. So one time I was working as a mechanic, as my mother getting sick and trying to help and save my mother, because she saved me with the bass. And now I have a bass and I don't have gigs and she's about to die. And then I took my bass and looked for the job, which is I scared the heck out of the people who was going to hire me, the first couple of people, because they saw me with the bass. They're like, ooh, this guy's coming with a weapon. No, he's not getting hired. Until one of the guy hired me, a mechanic, says to me, okay, do you know anything about the job? And I said, no, I don't know anything about the job, but my mother, she's dying, and I want to save my mother. I'm a musician. And when the guy saw the bass, he relaxed a little bit, but he had this gun in his pocket, in his waist, because he doesn't trust that, you know, this could be a weapon or something. Maybe it's a setup, you know, but he has to be ready, you know, for anything. So, and I just, you know, had my bass and I played a little bit for him, but it didn't mean anything to him until I got that call, because I always had the studio number from producers for in case they want me for a session, they can call the studio, because I didn't have a cell phone. It was back then. So call this number. I'm working at this job.
What year was this around?
This was 19, when I was working at the job, it was 1984, almost end of 84. And then 85, that's when Paul Simon came to South Africa, when I got that call.
Paul Simon come there because of the apartheid?
Mm-hmm.
Did he come there because of the apartheid?
No, he didn't come there because of the apartheid. What happened was the producer, a South African producer, gave him the music of South Africa because they're friends, you know. Like Paul is like, hey, how's the music, South Africa? The guy gave him the music. So when Paul got the music and Paul is like, wow, I love this, you know, I'm coming there, I need these people. So he came for the music, but, you know, also, of course, it sounded really political because the timing was bad, but Paul didn't really care about the timing that was bad. He came because musician invited him to come to the studio.
Right.
Yeah, and hang out, and he loved the music. And this man, he saved Miriam Makeba. Miriam Makeba, she couldn't have come home if he wasn't Paul Simon. Hugh Masekela couldn't have come home and died at home if he wasn't Paul Simon. You know, so Paul Simon came in and recorded the Graceland, and the Graceland took off, and then Paul Simon got Hugh Masekela and Miriam on tour, on the Graceland tour. And then he went back to Zimbabwe to give the people in Zimbabwe to say, look, here's your music. Here's your music.
Wow.
Now it's coming from America, so it's a whole different story. Now we're getting respected. This music we were playing for years, never respected because the government was controlling the radio station. They play what they want to hear. They never like to play. But because we have an international artist, so they took it, you know, serious. But Paul, he came there as a musician, and musician welcomed him to say, come in. Even Nelson Mandela, when Mandela came out in 1994, it was Paul's setup. Because when Paul went back with the Graceland 1989 to play in South Africa, that's when all Africans came together, and then even some rest of other people from other parts of the world joining the Graceland in Zimbabwe, the very biggest concert. And, you know, a couple of years later, 3 or 4 years later, Nelson Mandela was released, and Mandela invited Paul Simon to come home and say thank you to him for putting this monster concert and work with the musicians that still today are still play bass for Paul. You know, he gave me an opportunity.
Uh-oh, hold on. We lost you for a second there.
We lose you?
I think we lost him for a second. Hold on. All right, we got to figure out what's going on.
Can you hear me?
Oh, there you go, there you go. All right, cool. All right, so finish saying what you're saying.
So Paul really made a lot of changes, and he respected the musicians. But you know, at the end of the day, it's about business now. How you handle your own business. And for me, it was about, you know, I don't care about money. I care about learning and go distance and go to the country that I dreamed as a kid, 12 years old, dreaming about coming to America.
Yeah. Amen.
You know,
that's right.
It didn't come easy, but you know what? I did it.
Amen. I love it, man. But GT, I went to a BK as your nickname.
Yes, Brooklyn.
Hey, I want to also introduce you to my co-host, Mr. Don Fleming. Don, you have anything you like to say, anything on your mind, on your heart you want to share?
Well, first of all, how are you, Brother Kamalo? I'm a big fan, because here's the thing with me, you know, when you grow up, you listen to music, and when you get older, you start to know, you know, who's behind the drums, who's behind the bass, and who's playing, you know, who's doing the chorus and things like that. And to look at you, and then, you know, of course, I'm a kid, I'm 11 years old in 1985, and you know, when I would hear Paul Simon's music and what is Ladysmith Black Mambazo, and you hear the bass, and it was just something distinctive about the bass. And to actually 30 plus years later to actually get a chance to talk to you, it's a great feeling. And thank you for taking the time out of your schedule to do it again. I am a newly knowing your name now and knowing who you are now, I am a big fan. So thank you, brother, for your words of enlightenment. I wanted to ask a quick question about, you know, I grew up, you know, growing up, you know, the Reagan 80s and, you know, his opposition his pro position and, you know, divesting, being for apartheid and things like that, and going back to the Sharpeville massacre and things. How did that, and I know it's not a easy question. I don't want you to feel like you know you have to answer the broadness of it. But how did that, you know, going from the Sharpeville massacre and just apartheid period, how did that mold you? And I don't know if you kind of answered it before. I apologize because I just got here. But how did that mold you into And how did that mold you as far as the music that you were going to make and to the reach that you was going to do?
Well, here's the thing. I mean, like, there was so much pain with the Sharpeville massacre. And we mourn for people, but at the same time, we celebrate the culture.
Mm-hmm.
We fight going forward, you know. And for me, it was mm-hmm. like, okay, I'm not the kind of fighter who's going to have a spear and a shield. You know, my shield is the base because God doesn't give up. We're not all leaders like Nelson Mandela, because if we all speak, then it's a whole different thing. Mandela was the
mm-hmm.
speaker. He fought for us. He went to jail and suffered for 30-some years in prison for the people. And so for me, it was like about my family. It was about my grandfather, my grandmother, my father, the people
mm-hmm.
who never gone distance. And I didn't want to be defeated. And I said, you know what? The system wants to defeat us and become confused and losers. But you know what? I'm staying focused. I don't want to be redirected by nobody. My mother gave me a green light by buying me a base to go forward. And when she died,
mm-hmm.
I had to bury her with the money that I played a monster record to say goodbye to my mother and say thank you for the bass that you bought me. And so I can go distance with it. So for me, it was like fighting for my people, struggle for the next young Bagid who's going to come from Soweto someday. So for me, it was
mm-hmm.
about my people. I couldn't speak the language even when I joined Paul. I just came there with my ex, and I said, listen, I'm doing this for my people. You know we've been losing a lot of people. I lost my cousin. I'm playing for them, and I'm playing for the country, the South Africa, that these people, they gave me a culture to go and show the world that we are so loaded with colors of music. So,
beautiful.
You know, and Paul was the right guy. He came in when the timing was right. You know, I mean, like, I worked with other people before Paul. I worked with Harry Belafonte, and
mm-hmm.
I played on the album called Kazangur with Harry Belafonte.
Mm-hmm.
It was a great record, but I guess the timing was not right. I think it was probably 1983 or 84, but then when Paul went, things were much different. And our producer, who knew every musician in South Africa, he said, guys, here's the opportunity. So it's up to you if you want about these leaders that they tell you not to do, you know, you can, it's up to you. You want to stay, you stay, you go, you go. And for me, and I look at it like, wait a minute. Yeah, these leaders, they always create events and then call musicians because they know once they have musicians on stage, the whole township is going to come running because they love music.
Mm-hmm.
And then they can start talking stuff, the language that we don't understand about what they want to change. You know, South Africa is still where I left off many years ago. Musicians are still struggling. They don't have much gig. Maybe they might have a little different than when I was in South Africa. But this struggle still continues. And those leaders, they're not supporting musicians, you know, to say, look, you know, you made the struggle better for us because you fought for us. You came and played, and people, they came and talked to the people. We picked the leader. But now we have venues for you at center on this and that and that. They don't have that. You know, they
mm-hmm.
don't have that. So for me, it was like, hey, look, it's about you. It's not about anybody else. These people, they don't send me to school to learn how to play the bass. I had to struggle without shoes and getting cut by glasses, balls, because I didn't have money for sneakers. And I ran to the township and learned the bass. Now they're going to tell me not to do this. I have no. You know, no.
Wow.
It's about
now,
me.
Wow. I do know, you know, you have a vast resume. It's not just Paul Simon. It's Gloria Estefan and John Cicada and Bob James and Grover Washington. So I get it. I understand, you know, you're not just one-dimensional that way. Miriam Makeba, Mother Africa herself, what was it like just working with her? And again, Wardell, I apologize if you might have asked this before.
Nobody asked me, and I'm glad you asked me. Nobody. But I'll tell you something
about
jazz.
I'm a big fan, of course, South African jazz anyway, but I'm a big fan of Mother Africa. And just please, can you tell us a little bit about working with her?
That lady being on the plane, on tour buses with her, it was an educational for me because I remember when I was about 2 years old, my mother, she used to sing these songs, you know, the clicking song, and then talk about Miriam. But she saw my interest in music, and then she started to talk about Miriam and Hugh. He's like, look, when you start playing music, I don't want anything to happen to you because you're going to run away like Hugh Masekela. We'll never see you again. And I said, nah, it's not going to happen to me. But I was just saying it. But when I met Miriam and I told Miriam, I said, you know, Mama Africa, Mazi, I used to call her Mazi. I said, Mazi, you know, my mother used to talk about you. And now I cannot believe I'm standing here on stage with you. I mean, I cried the first couple of nights when I play, and I said, man, I made history here. Now I'm sitting with these two legends. I'm playing with Miriam Makeba, playing Soweto Blues, that song that where, you know, 1976 kids got slaughtered, you know, because of the uprising. And now I'm standing here playing with Miriam, being from Soweto. I mean, this is unbelievable. And I love Miriam. Every time I walk with Miriam, I have to open the door for her just to give that respect that she deserves from me. And then when I play the bass, I play the bass so that she can smile. And remember, the next generation which just came from South Africa, who's playing for the world now. So it's Hugh Masekela. Hugh Masekela, he was like my father. Even one time I said to him, hey, bro, you know, everybody said I look like you, and I don't know my father. What's up with this picture? And it makes me like, just because you're broke, you know, don't think like I'm your father. You know, we might look like because we come from the same township. But, I mean, that those guys, they were like my college. I was educated by them. And I mean, like I learned so much from them and hear the stories how they left South Africa. They could come home, you know, because, you know, they were in exile and all of that stuff. And I feel their pain because, and I said, wow, you know, because I've lived through that until I left 1986. But I've lived, after Hugh left, I was the next generation to leave that leftovers from the struggle. You know, it got me. My son, he doesn't have that, but he has nothing because South Africa is dry. There's no police people that they used to drive around and arrest people, but now none of that. But there's no jobs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is a whole new problem that the kids, they shut down. They shut down the pandemic. So, but working with those people, they just taught me so much. Ladysmith Black Mambazo, Joseph Shabalala, I've met that man when I was 14 years old, starting to going to the studios and recording. That's when I met Joseph, and to spend time with these guys on the plane, I mean, I tell you, I was in heaven.
Oh.
And then, once we finished Graceland, everybody knew about this guy who played on the Paul Simon, now getting session with Cyndi Lauper, Gloria Estefan, and Laurie Anderson, and, you know, man, I play with so many people. I play with Josh Groban, you know, Sting. I play with, you know,
Bob James.
John Legend. You know, John Legend, and I play with Gerald Albright. I went on tour with Gerald Albright and Chaka Khan, Philip Bailey, Keiko Matsui. A lot of responsibility as a bass player. So for my thing, it's like my ear is like an elephant. You give me the songs to learn, I will learn, and I will play even better. You know, I mean, I'll do my best to keep the job.
Well, hey, listen.
So
listen,
that gave me a chance to learn.
Kalalo, I want to take a little music break, but I want you to tell us about this new record that you have coming out with the Electric Flow album. I want you to tell us a little bit about the Electric Flow that I want to play here.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell us a little bit about the song before I play it?
My record, yes. You know, I would say for all the years I've been traveling, you know, different places, and I always look for struggling people, like on tour when I have 2-3 days off and I hang out in the town, like anywhere I go, I just hang out. I was in Detroit and hang out with some people in the, you know, just like ghetto, like me, where I grew up, to understand the stories of the people, why they're homeless, and then I can give my dollar because I got the story from somebody. And then I go back to my hotel room, then I come up with a bass line that's going to talk because I'm not very good. Maybe I'm talking now better, but so I go back to the hotel and start creating creating stuff, my bassline, like they got me out of South Africa because I never talked too much in South Africa. I just play the bass and say, here's my story, my voice. And then, so I did this on tour, and then I put this record together while I was traveling pieces by pieces. Come to the hotel, I write the bridge, and I write the chorus, and, you know, I come up with the right groove that's going to make sense. Now, this record is called What You Hear Is What You See. It's about everything. Sometimes I'm stuck in the constructions and I hear these workers, they're hitting so hard, and then they give me a rhythm. Then I go home and I remember that rhythm they gave me, go home, write the bass track, and then come up with my track. So just creating about what we hear, what we see. You know, I go to the park and I hear these birds, you know, making the noise. I see them, you know, and so that really inspired me. And then 2019, when we got hit with pandemic, we got our tour canceled. And then now I'm home because I'm never home. You know, I'm always traveling. But now I'm home. What to do at home? Hey, wait a minute. I got my studio that I never get a chance to use. Let me see what I got here. You know, all these pieces I've been writing. So then I play a track and say, wow, this is cool. So then I start getting distracted from the pandemic, thinking about what's going on and just focus on the music. Mm. And I did that. And then the stuff started to make sense. And then I sent it to another friend of mine who plays an amazing saxophone, Maxfield Gus from Philadelphia. I sent him the track. He listened to it. He's like, man, what do you want me to do with this? You know, the thing is chaotic. You know, you have all these African things going on. And I said, Max, I need a producer. I need another set of ear to help me to listen to this stuff. And then let's come up with something. And he says, okay, give me a minute. And then you work on the tracks, you clean up the tracks, and I mean, like, unbelievable. And then he sent it back to me and says, can you replace the bass, play what you play, but have a better tone, you know? And then we started building like that, and then Maxi says, hey, I know somebody who can play drums on this, and I know somebody who can play piano on this or the guitar. So he started to bring some people. And then I get a chance at home to play a bunch of things, like people that they don't even know I play. I play the aerophone. It's like a Roland saxophone. And I play keyboards and I play percussion and I sing a little bit. So I put a lot of other instruments on this album besides the bass. The bass is just a foundation of everything to carry everything like I've learned from everyone. This record, it's a heavy record. It might not be a groove that people can hear at the club or something. This is about all the pieces that I put together from artists that I work with to give me, you know, to educate me to fly on my own. So now I got this project that has influence from everyone, and it's got the home, you know, the world in it. So I hope people, they dig it because, you know, I put a lot of time and I have so many musicians that I had to put a dollar in their pocket at home while they're dealing with this pandemic. Mm. Everybody's contributed some amazing drummer, Pooji Bell, played some drums. And I have another dude from New Jersey, you know, James Roos. I mean, like Antonio Sanchez, you know, Jason Klonik. I mean, like I have a bunch of people, piano, singers, guitar players, to come up with this project. And I'm just so grateful that everybody donated their time and give me this beautiful music that I want the world to hear besides, you know, playing on the Paul Simon and other stuff. Now, this is me. This is my, I've written maybe 8 albums, but nothing like this. This is the album that was really worked and produced properly. And then the fact that I got signed with Roper Dope, small label, but amazing heart. So, you know, it's a gamble, of course, as you know, as musicians, like you put the project and hoping like, hey, look, if I get a Grammy, but you don't know how to do that, you know, but we just got to keep creating and see what happens, you know. So that's what I'm doing pretty much here.
All right. Well,
but this record is beautiful. Electric Flow, my friend, it's awesome.
All right. We'll be right back.
Thank you.
you do what you do, and we love it. So you said the album. When is the album coming out now?
On the 27th, October 27th.
October 27th.
Yeah. There's two singles. There's two singles coming up. There's a song called "Hippie Village" on the album that's coming out as the first, as the second single after Electric Flow. And then the third one is going to be a Nice Day. There's a song called Nice Day. And also, too, it's going to follow the Happy Village.
Okay, awesome. Now, if people want
Nina,
to...
she'll send it to you.
Yeah, yeah. What about a link? Do you have a website or that people could follow you and support you and stuff that you're doing? And I'm not trying to...
They can go to BagitiKumalo.com.
Oh, wow. Okay. I like that. I like that.
Yeah.
And
that means our people nation .com. Oh, base net .com. Here.
So am I spelling this right? BAKITHIKUMALO base.com.
BASS.com, yeah.
Right. Okay, great. All right, cool. Now, I have a question from overseas real fast, and then I know Don has a question for you. That was, is there this is from the UK. Do you have any experiences that you may be able to share from the Graceland recordings when you're recording?
Anything I can share from my recording?
Yeah, with the you know, any memories that may come up that's special to you when you're recording the Graceland album.
The Graceland. Yeah, I tell you, the memory that I remember very well, it was going to the airport and take the jet to New York. I've never been on the jet, 17-hour flight. I remember one time I was standing on the plane after drinking and eating, and then it's like, where the hell is America? They said, no. We're still flying. You have to take a nap and wake up, eat breakfast, and then fly again twice. And I said, man, I got so frustrated.
When we get to JFK,
we're exhausted. We're like hangover, the whole band. And then as we get out after the customs, and then the guy is waiting there with a suit, a black car, like the limo. We didn't know it was a limo. We thought, like, what happened? Somebody died. What's going on here? You know, so they tell us to go to the limo. The driver is opening the door. He's like, come on in, guys. We're like, wait a minute. And then we start clicking like crazy with the other brothers, speaking Zulu, like, hey, what the hell is going on here? Why this car? But once the guy showed us, and then he opened the door and he grabbed like a bottle of whiskey and rum, and he says, guys, I got this.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
And then we went, man, I mean, it was like amazing. And New York is like, man, I didn't think there was another part of America. I thought New York was the whole America, you know. until when we go to the hotel, we had a guy to help us to say, guys, before you walk out, you have to be careful because people are walking different than, you know, Africans. Africans, they walk like you bump into people, you know. There's no... So... We're walking
right.
In New York. You have to know which side you're walking, you know, because we come from the, what is it? We drive on the left or right. I can't even remember. So it was a lot of learning. And then also to New York, you're scary, man, because it's like you see the New York in movies, a lot of shooting, and, you know, it's crazy. But, man, once we were there, it was unbelievable. I mean, I'll never forget that. And I remember it was August and hot as hell, and I was wearing my leather pants and my greasy hair. I was dripping because, and I thought that's how, you know, you want to grab inside, you got to go get your pants together. And
crazy.
Then, hot as hell, I was like, you know, August, in South Africa, August is like four,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
You know what they're living there, man.
Yeah, yeah. When is that? But this is the thing, you know, because the culture is so different. And in South Africa, best friends hold hands, right? They walk down the street holding hands. So in the United States, when you got to the United States, did you have your best friend with you? I hope not, because it was, I know they were giving you some trouble over in the United States.
Man, when we got to New York, everything was open 24 hours. I remember I was eating pizza at 4:30 in the morning. And
right.
I said, wow, I love America.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely.
Because
absolutely.
It's like everything was open and, you know, and then
well, New York
in Times closed. Square.
Right, New York never closes. It's 24/7.
Yeah, 24/7, you're like hanging out, and then I'm like, man, township, you know, you cannot walk. When it's 8 o'clock, that's it. You got to shut down. Stop going anywhere. Unless you're drunk, you're going to end up somewhere else.
Yeah. And I've seen a lot of it. So, and, you know, I used to live in Houlton.
Wow.
Right down the street from Mandela.
Yeah. In Fenton.
Yeah. Right there. All I saw was the flag. I never got to see him. I was like, man, when is he going to come outside? And so, but anyway, Don, go ahead with your question.
Well, I know we got a little time left, man. I don't want to hold you up. But, again, thank you for your time and taking the time out and just giving out that wisdom and again, your pedigree. And I guess, you know, I'm from a younger standpoint, and not too young. I'm still kind of old, but no. From the hip hop generation, a lot of the music that was out, that was coming out of South Africa, influenced a lot of, you know, a little bit of it influenced the Public Enemies and the X-Clans and all of those things that were going on with the apartheid situation, and of course Mandela being free. A little bit of that kind of. Hip-hop got a little bit from that. Has anyone from the hip-hop community just got a chance to come to you and say thank you or just come to you and at least any collaborations with you?
Well, no, not really. You know, even like I said earlier that I played the bass on Jodeci just like two bars and then they got me out of the studio. Because they just needed the groove for that, you know, particular thing.
Right.
But I never really, you know, because here's the thing, too, about our struggle in American, you know, African-American struggle. Our struggle was similar, different languages, because during that time, you had King, Dr. King, and Malcolm X, and all the greatest people. Then we had Nelson Mandela, mm-hmm. you know, Desmond Tutu, and then all of that, because our struggle was similar. That's why, for me, transition was much easier to leave South Africa and come to America than going to West Africa because, you know, it was a whole different thing, you know, because for us, we were raised by Western, you know, so that's why for me the transition was much easier to be here and, you know, and meet up with my people. So, but yeah, no, never get a chance to see, to talk to, you know, anybody from the website. Like, you know, I work with Bootsy Collins, but it was about session, you know, play the bass. I remember when he said,
right.
Give me that African juju, baby. And it was a ballad.
Oh, my goodness.
And Nicole Bootsy, man,
Bootsy Collins.
African
nice.
Juju on this thing. It's a ballad.
Wow.
And the song
ballad.
Called Munchies. It was Munchies. I got Munchies, you know, like that song. And then I said to but Bootsy, he meant the fretless, like play the fretless, but he said, give me that African juju, baby.
Oh my goodness!
And then did two songs. One of them, Snoop was rapping on it, you know, but he didn't make the album. But I mean, hopefully, I would love to see the cats like, you know, LL Cool J, you know, Will Smith, you know, all amazing talent.
Yeah.
You know.
Yes. Okay. Well, I wanna make sure that we give a shout out to, you know, all the people that have made this possible for us to get together. And so you want to do that? You want to take
that? Yes, indeed.
Yeah, you give me the name if I can pronounce everybody right.
Okay. So Nina, thank you so much. And
okay,
Entertainment, TMO Entertainment, I mean. Boy, I'm dyslexic. Thank you so much for, you know, making this all possible today. You guide us a great, great interview with this brother here. And, man, oh, man, this is really good for the soul.
Thank you. And I'm actually ready to say thank you to Timo for connecting us. And then you to connect, because you know my peeps, you've been there with them. And And, you know, just thank you for everything. And thanks to Nina for everything that she has done. And I'm looking forward to come to California and see you guys in person and hang out.
Yeah.
It's funny.
Well, I'm in Texas right now, so you can come here first. Come to Texas. I know my phone is a California number because I've been there for 40 years, so I can't change my number. But I moved to Texas. But I'd love to see you. I go back and forth to California all the time. So when you do go to California,
which part of Texas, Houston?
I'm in between Houston and San Antonio.
Yeah, there's a girl, a good friend of mine. She plays drums with Beyonce. Her name is Queen Akora.
Oh yeah, she's a bad, bad girl.
Yeah. She's amazing, and she's a good friend of mine. And we talk, and you know, she hooked me up with the Ultimate Ears, you know, the ear monitor. And and I love Texas.
Yeah.
I love San Antonio Spurs. They sent me a ball that was signed by Iceman, and Tony Parker, Tim Duncan, and David Robinson.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Now I'm waiting for
the basketball team, the Spurs.
Yeah. He's not that far from me. Yeah.
Wow, the Iceman.
Yeah. Iceman, what's up?
Number 44.
So, you know, I named my son after Hakeem Olajuwon.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, Hakeem Olajuwon. Yeah.
Yeah, Hakeem, you represent the Nigerian community.
Yes.
So it's Kevin Odabo, you represent the Kenya.
Well, what?
Oh.
Kevin Odabo.
Wow, I didn't know that.
From Kenya. Wow.
I'm telling you, they worldwide. I love, you know, Akeem and Dikembe, all them cats. I grew up playing my game after them, you know, because I was, you know, I was a basketball player one time in my life. But anyway, go ahead,
that's
gentlemen.
What I'm saying, that's what I'm saying. When in Africa, you do everything, it's up to you. You do it the best to go on top, you know, or either you stay in the township and just trying to figure out every day, but, you know, no changes. But you have to make a change because the change is you, you know. So that's why, like, these guys, they just took it to another level of the game. Now it's up to the young people to follow that. Same thing with my bass. Like, you know, the next bass players generation, they need to come up with something. But you know what? The thing is, When you're playing and there's nothing that really inspire you to be out of that, you just kind of relax. Like, everything has been given to me, so I don't have to work extra hard. But when you don't have that, you got to find it.
Yeah,
that's where the challenge comes.
Right.
But, you know.
That's it right there.
Yeah.
And, well, all right, my man. Well, thank you so much. We love you.
Yes,
thank you. And keep up the great work. We'll keep your legacy alive here on Solar Records Radio. And as we're going out, I want to play the song Celebration. And for me, it's a celebration to be able to interview somebody from South Africa, a country that I love so much. And I fell in love with that country. And I didn't know I was in love with it until one day I was in the car driving. And this is after I went there. And a song from South Africa was playing. And it just... Oh, I could feel it in my soul, I feel it in my heart. And after I heard it, I started calling my friends down there. I was like, I want to come back. I need to come back. And they said, well, you're never coming back. You keep saying that, but you never come. And I said, I got to come. And I still haven't been there, but I got to go because it's something.
Man, that's what I was telling some of my friends, like, look, you know, you come home. This is your home. And, you know, things will change better because, you know, that's what the people, they're hoping, like, you know, we need America, our people to come in and help us to get this Africa going because we have so much resources that we're still struggling to get into it because, you know, first people they were destroyed with the education so that they don't know what they have. You know, we're on the dark side, most people. You know, I got out of the dark side. Now I can see it like, man, I want to bring my people to take over the music department, the schools, and not to record with these companies they come from, you know, Euro, and then take the African music and then resell it somewhere else. No, we need the real people that they can come and take the land. Shaka Zulu is the land for you, for me, you know, for all the people, you know. So maybe someday, 10 years or 30 years from now, things will change. We'll be that way because Africa is for African-American. Yeah.
Hey. So. Amen.
Someday, man. I'm glad to spend the time at home.
Have you ever been to Sun City when they had the studio down there, the big recording studio in Sun City?
Oh, you know, it's funny. I played there when I went to play with Jonathan and Bob James and Bill Kissel.
Jonathan Butler?
Yeah, my boy. I just talked to him today also, too, you know,
I love
Jonathan was here this past weekend. He was playing with Marcus Miller in Philadelphia, but I had a gig. I didn't go and see him, but he called me, and we had to talk on the phone, and today I just called him, and he told me he was writing a song about, you know, South Africa. I needed some translation because I speak Zulu than him, you know.
So I had to help him.
But he's my boy. We grew up together, and I went on tour with him. I played with his band,
He lives in Cape Town, right?
Huh?
He lives in Cape Town, right?
He's from Cape Town, but he lives in California now. He's in L.A.
Okay, cool. All right, man. Well, I went to Sun City, and I was blown away. That place was amazing, but I heard they tore it up now. They got tore up when the apartheid was coming. I mean, well, it was already at the end, but they just didn't want. I forgot. Something happened. Some political thing happened, and they just tore the place up, man. It was just really disgusting because they had the biggest Neve console I ever seen in my life. I was like, what is that? What? I've never seen anything like that before. It was just unbelievable. Anyway, man, God bless you. And
thank you so much.
Again.
You too, man. Bless you guys. Thank you so much.
Okay. So I'm going to play Celebration.
Let's celebrate, you know, because that's what life is all about. That song is Celebration. We celebrate life. And when we go on, the next generation can look at the picture and say, yes, let me celebrate his legacy. So here we go.
Amen.
All right.
There we go.
All right.
Thank you, gentlemen.
All right.
Thank you.
Love what is in your
After seeing people respond. In other words, say, for instance, if someone was recording us, right, they recorded you and I, just you and I in the room together, and they started recording, but they only started recording after you slapped me, and then they showed my reaction to you. It makes me look like a madman if that's when you start recording. You know, like, I'm all upset because you hit me and I'm coming at you like, are you crazy? But they never showed you slapping me. So that's what they did in South Africa. They would edit out the parts that they did wrong and only share the reaction of the people and make them look like animals. And so when I got to know these people firsthand, it was obviously you don't get to know everybody, and everybody's not good people. Some people are a little out there. So it was such a blessing for me to. At first, I wasn't going to go because I kept on saying it's crazy over there. I'm not. Are you kidding me? Why should I go there? And so Ricky Fries went first, right? I said, okay, well, let me know because I have a baby coming. So after he's born, if everything's cool, I'll come. And so Ricky Fries went over from Dynasty. Now he's with Morris Day and the Times. And he went over, and he was there. And he called me and said, Wardell, you'll love it. You need to come. It's cool. It's not what you think it is. I go, really? And so I said, okay, Ricky, I trust you. And so Ricky was there like 30 days before he called me and told me that. And so then I said, okay, I'll be there. Let him know the grade on and set everything up, and I'll come next month. My son is just born, so I need to be here with him for at least a month, you know, before I leave. And so that happened, and I went there. And so now Ricky's been there for, 2 months, going on three. And so Ricky had he was only going to be there for 3 months, so he had a little bit more time left. And so Ricky and I were there for about 30 days together, and we had a great time. When he was leaving, I was like, whoa, that's kind of weird. You're leaving me over here by myself. But it was just like, you know, so far away from home, right? I was like, wow, and I'm here by myself. But what ended up happening is that I met some amazing people, and it just turned into, instead of me being there for 3 months, I stayed there for 9 months, almost 10 months, 9.5 months. So because I met some amazing people, and they are amazing. And so that's why the interview with them was so touching to me, you know, from an emotional point of view, because, you know, I could hear even his voice. I could hear those people talking to me just through the sound of his voice. So anyway, but I played earlier, I was trying to say Alpha Anderson from Chic. That was who that was that I played. And we started off with Celebration from our brother. And we just had a great and wonderful interview with, and we call him BK for short. BK is in the house because Lord have mercy, his name. What a good brother, though, and talented. Whoa, man, oh, man. But anyway. Now, tomorrow's Throwback Thursday, and can y'all just, instead of posting some old school pictures, just put on some of your old school clothes and take a picture. Come on, y'all. I know y'all. Come on, Astrid. I know you got some 70s clothes around there. Greg, you got some 70s clothes. Don't act like y'all not. Y'all could go to the store and buy them if you don't have them because they like that retro stuff. Let's just dress old school, and I'll see what I can find. I might can find an Afro wig. Come on, guys, let's have fun with this. Right? Thursday, it's so much fun because with Throwback Thursday, and if any of you guys want to call in, please feel free to call in if y'all want to talk about this. But, you know, with Throwback Thursday, you get to reminisce, you know, and play all. It's so much music. I mean, I was driving the other day, and I was on the old school station, and I said, ooh, I need to play that song. I forgot about that song. It's so many songs that is so good for the soul. And so that's why I like Throwback Thursday, because we get to get through these old great songs that really inspired a lot of writers, producers, musicians, and relationships. People are making babies, right? And so anyway, so that's it. That's it. Tune in tomorrow at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And thank you guys again for tuning in today. Thanks to TMO Entertainment and Nina for helping me get our brother on, BK, on today and have a wonderful interview with him. Man, oh, man. Yes, I got to meet that brother. I sure like to jam with him one day, too. I want to play. I love playing with bass players. Ooh, man. All right, guys. Let's keep this music going on Solar Records Radio. More indie artists. This is our brother Dale Williams on Solar Records Radio. Sweet.
Right here. Wait for your call, but you don't call. You miss, come here, sugar, and get to this.